saving money when you start your next project today at Menards. Check out our great selection of garage and utility lighting options. In stock, ready to take home today. We carry everything to help you illuminate whatever project you're working on. Shop garage and utility lighting products in store at your nearest Menards. You can also view all of our entire selection of lighting options today on Menards.com. Save big money
at Menards. Hey guys, I'm Lydia.
Hi, I'm Jesse.
And I'm Adam. Let's talk Hoya. Welcome to the Let's Talk Hoya podcast. I wanted to say back, but I didn't.
Yep, I saw that.
What are we going to talk about today, Lydia?
Today.
We're going back to school.
We are going back to school. We're going to talk about, and this was a listener suggestion. And so thank you, listener. I don't remember who because I forgot. But there's a listener suggestion saying, oh, it'd be so cool to talk about leaf anatomy, but also how the leaf structure is affected and adapted from environment and things of that nature. So it's going to be a whole episode on just foliage characteristics of Hoya.
Oh,
nice.
That's exciting.
Yes.
But first,
we have Hoya news.
We got news.
Las noticias.
Gracias.
This is some personal Hoya news from LTH Podcast, but we have something super exciting to announce. Stickers!
We have our favorite stickers. Yeah.
Who doesn't love a good sticker?
Of course, our Peduncle Pals get an exclusive sticker.
And some of them are already out on their way in the mail.
We love our exclusive Peduncle Pals sticker. It's about a 3-inch sticker. It's circular.
It's but we a big have one.
Two stickers that we're going to be selling. And they're one is a die cut sticker of our blooms in our logo, which they're like little cute Bella blooms. They're beautiful.
Bella blooms.
That one's selling for $5. And we have our logo, Let's Talk Hoya, a circle. So they're both about 2 inches, and that one's selling for $3, or you can bundle them and get them both for $7.
Because who doesn't love a bundle deal?
Who doesn't love a deal? So since, you know, we're a little indie podcast, we're selling these through a Google form. We don't have a shop for these. So in our bio, in our link tree, you'll see a sticker form. And button. You can just fill it out. And what we're going to do is invoice you through PayPal or Venmo. So once you fill out the form, you'll receive an invoice from us. Once you pay it, we'll ship out your stickers.
And then you can put them wherever you want.
Yeah, you can wrap your favorite podcast everywhere you go.
That's right. And honestly, the blooms are my favorite.
Yeah. I mean, we were pretty giddy and excited about them when we received them and slapped them on our water bottles. So
yeah. I need more because I have too many water bottles.
So yeah, that's our news for today.
All right. So I feel like it's been a little while since I've done some like deeper research because the past few episodes that we've done, it's been with like guests. And so they mostly have the knowledge or some chatty episodes just because we've been busy. And so I really got my brain working here these last couple of days looking up some information. But yeah, we're going to talk about some different information on Hoya leaf characteristics. I thought it would be fun to start off with some like common leaf terminology that you see when you're trying to read like publications or even in like Facebook groups and like Instagram. I've seen people using the scientific verbiage too. So if y'all are wondering like what some of these words mean, just to kind of start there and go over those.
Or even us when we're describing our favorite Hoyas, we'll use some of the terminology. And since this is a podcast, we're going to paint the picture for you.
We're going to paint.
With words. Oh, how poetic.
Something that I just learned this past weekend on our trip to LA together, which we're going to talk all about in our Patreon episode. But Anna mentioned the Pandorata, was named after the leaf shape. And I was like, I don't remember that leaf shape. Turns out it is a leaf shape. The pandar, it's like the fiddle pandarit shape, the pandarit leaf. And I was like, oh, I mean, because most of them are named after like, yeah, like the Bella, the Hoya Lanceolata. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's usually what they go with. But when they're trying to name these as like the macrophylla thing that we...
Latifolia. Yeah. It all happens. It all happens. But I feel like two of the most common ones that you see all the time is like the leaf texture. They talk about a lot in publications, mm-hmm. and two of the more common ones, because I feel like the vegetative part of the leaf more commonly in various different formats are either pubescent or glabrous, which we use those words pretty often too. But pubescent is basically the fuzzy foliage.
Yeah. So you got your Thompsonii,
Lauterbachii.
Yes. Why am I drawing a blank on other fuzzy ones? I love fuzzy
ones. The one Hoya I just got at UPT, which was Hoya SF. Hold on.
Fungii is pubescent on the
underside.
Abaxial. Is that mm-hmm. abaxial side of the leaves?
And there's ones that have like slight pubescence, more, some that are a little bit more, but pubescent is usually a characteristic type. And then glabrous means smooth.
But isn't that the one that almost feels like skin?
Glabrous just in general is like smooth. But then, I mean, there's different leaf textures once you touch the leaves, right? Because then there's some where it's glabrous, but it's like thin. And then there's some where it's glabrous, but like leathery, like yeah. thicker. And then you have ones that, you know, feel like fleshy or some that feel succulent. So I think a lot of times, like when I read the publications, when I see glabrous, I know it means like, oh, it's just absent of
little hairs.
Mm-hmm. So that's usually what I think.
My bad. I always thought glabrous always equaled fleshy.
Oh, yeah. So usually when they put that, they're meaning smooth. Did you find the name of that one, Hoya?
I did. I can't pronounce it. It's Hoya Ancajanoe.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Hoya Ancajanoe. And Wendy okay. liked it so much that she wanted a cutting and took one.
And hold on, let me see. Ancajanoe. Yeah.
Ancajanoe, I think.
I think that's named after somebody.
I hope not, because a poor person. I'm just kidding. But yeah.
It was very fuzzy.
It is very, very fuzzy. And the Velosa, too, that I got.
That's it. That's right. Velosa.
Visibly fuzzy. Yeah. There's so many different ones.
Verstigia. How can I forget that one?
There really are a lot. I mean, there's Sigillatis varieties, Leei.
Yeah, the Leei. But the visibly fuzzy ones are just chef's kiss.
Like the Thompsonii. Yeah. And you can just like see them. But yeah. So those are, I feel like, two of the more common characteristics is just variations of pubescence and foliage being glabrous. And then another one that I see often is publications referring to the lamina, which is the blade of the leaf. And there's a lot of different blade shapes of leaves.
Lots.
So many different kinds. But what are some that you guys feel like are just like more common ones?
I feel like Lancelot is a pretty common one because it's, you know, that's your Lacunosa, the Bellas.
And I feel like generally a lot of Hoya are lanceolate.
Yeah.
And so basically what that means is the leaf is wider at the base than at the midpoint, and then it tapers towards the apex, which is the tip of that leaf.
Kind of like a long teardrop.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's me painting the picture right there, guys. For those of you who are dreaming.
Wow, for those visual learners. What's another one do you guys feel like?
I feel like ovate is like also very common, like in the Carnosa, the Chelsea, where the base is rounder and then but it's like a lot rounder than the lanceolate and then also does end at a little tip.
Mm-hmm.
But the chunky boy, lanceolate. What about the elliptic one? I feel like that one's pretty common too.
They say that. I was like looking up elliptic because there's like the elliptica. mm-hmm. which is named after the elliptic leaf shape. But when I had looked it up, they said that elliptic, like a elliptic leaf shape, is known to be like the most simple leaf shape.
I was gonna say that makes me think of like if I was in kindergarten and I said draw a leaf, that's what I would draw, elliptic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, the weird thing is I would go with like a maple leaf.
Oh, that's because you're from like the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, maybe.
That's true. Because when I would draw leaves, it would always just be just like a half moon on one side, half moon on the other side, and done.
Yeah. Oh. Same. Yeah. Maybe that's one of those like geographical tests, like tests where you're from.
If you're from the East Coast, you're out there drawing freaking maple leaves, and we're out here drawing like lemon leaf, lemon tree leaves. Yeah. But I was looking up, and they said that Hoya leaves in general, the most common ones are lanceolate, elliptic, and aube chordate.
Oh.
I know, which aube chordate is like the carrie. It's like a heart shape with the pointed end attached to the stem. And so they said that those are the most like common ones that they consider the most common for Hoya.
I'm trying to think if I have any aube chordate ones that I would have.
Well, you do still have a carrie.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this chordate that I'm seeing is a little bit
I was thinking the other way. I was thinking the petiole with the heart shape. Yeah, because she didn't say chordate.
Oh. I said aube chordate.
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. Apparently my ears don't work. I'll just shut up, guys.
No. I forgot. I was thinking carrie, the carrie, not carrie.
Oh.
As in, you know.
You've really just dismissed that. I know. That species altogether.
I forgot that you existed. Isn't love. It isn't hate.
It's just indifference.
That's right.
But what about like some rare leaf shapes that aren't like super common?
Well, I'm going to go back to the Pandorot one because.
Oh. Okay.
That.
Then X that out and keep on going.
What?
No, that's going to be one of the uncommon ones, right? Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Oh.
He was answering your question.
Yeah, I think the Pandorot one was until the Pandorata. But I guess that's kind of like what the fiddle leaf fig is, but I just never put it together. Because, like, I always think smaller leaves and the fiddle leaf is huge.
Huge. Mm-hmm.
But that is a shape that I think is pretty unique in the Hoya world. Mm-hmm. And hard, like it doesn't. There's not a ton of Hoyas that have that certain shape.
Mm-hmm.
And anything long and narrow, like the Linearis, Insularis, I don't think those are very common shapes. And like, if I didn't know about Hoya, I would not assume that those are Hoyas.
Yeah, that's true.
Rotundiflora. Yeah, I mean,
if you saw Linearis up next to all a bunch of whole different other Hoyas, you'd just be like, that one doesn't belong with all these.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually saying that because, you know, like undulata is named after like the undulate leaf shape. And they're saying that that's actually not a super common Hoya leaf shape type.
Well, that's what I was wondering too.
Having the waves like on the margin of the leaves. But then also not just undulate leaves with the waves, but also serrate leaves, which is like if someone were to take like a hacksaw to the leaf and it has like notches like on a saw on the end of the leaves with the teeth like pointing towards the point.
And the undulata has both of those. I have undulata and serrated.
Yeah, that is true. So that one, maybe that's why like people are so attracted to it because it's so unique. Like that leaf shape is so unique.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then just like it's like sheen and sparkle too because it's that's I feel true. Like you I've never seen an like all green undulata. They always have some sort of freckle, sparkle, sheen to it. It's just like a unicorn.
I forgot about the undulate leaves, the margins, because that is probably my favorite characteristic on leaves.
And now there's so many different ones coming out that are pretty from like Indonesia.
Yeah.
Like all the Aceh's. And now there's like the gomas, like the species gomas. And there's so many different ones that have these really unique leaf shape characteristics. But not only the leaf blade, but also like the venation.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we talk a little bit about venation?
Let's move on to veins.
So there's, I feel like the two vein types that we talk about the most or that are like pretty prominent in Hoya are the palmate venation and the pinnate venation, which palmate venation is when the main veins of the leaf blade radiate from a common point near the base. So they usually start at like this common point and then they spread out. Is the palmate leaf venation.
So that's going to be like your latifolia has palmate.
Fungi?
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. They're just not as prominent, but yeah.
The tequila sunrise. I'm like, we're like looking at the Hoya to be like, oh, this
latifolias.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just said that.
Yep.
Oh.
And then
my brain's thinking too hard to be listening.
Then there's the pinnate venation, which is there's the secondary veins that run parallel from the midrib of the leaf to out to the margin. So those are two that I've seen a lot when I read like publications saying if they have palmate or pinnate leaf venation.
I was trying to think about elliptica, because like elliptica has very unique venation, but they do refer to that as pinnate venation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost circular. You know how it kind of like comes around?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, but yeah, because look at the venation. They're almost like parallel to the midrib. You see how it's like parallel? So
on which Hoya are you talking about?
Elliptica.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are some other ones?
What about erythrina? What type of venation would you consider that?
Oh, those are probably pinnate. They run parallel to the midrib of the leaf.
Although, are they starting in one location?
Because if they start at a common point, then they're usually palmate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's palmate. I ain't no expert. I'm just sharing what I know.
I would probably classify erythrina as a palmate. Mm-hmm. Just because I think that they all start towards the petiole, which is like where the bottom of the leaf is.
Mm. The base of the leaf.
What about the multiflora? Because that one is pretty thin leaf, but I also see a lot of venation in it.
I would rather not guess. Because it says like in the publications, but I just don't know. So I don't want to guess and be like, oh, this is this venation, and then it's not.
Well, when you said what other types, are you talking about other types of Hoya? I think that's what the assumption was there.
I was talking confused about other types of venation.
Oh.
Like if you guys have...
I mean, pinnate and palmate are you the main two.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really...
Yeah,
I haven't heard any others, you know?
Yeah, there's like some others that you can find like photos of, but none that I see like super, super often. So, but also we do have, for visual learners, have images that we will upload onto some show notes so you guys can see kind of what that looks like.
Yeah, check out those show noties.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so that is just in general some leaf blade shapes and textures and venation of different Hoya. But I think one of the most interesting things about Hoya is just how the leaf characteristics are like that because of nature. Like they've adapted to being like that because of the environment that they grow in, because they're epiphytic plants.
Yeah, and most of them are in long periods of drought.
Mm-hmm.
So they really have adjusted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even for like seasons where there is like a ton of rain, they say that epiphytic plants in general are more prone to being exposed to a lot of sunlight and air just because of how they grow. And so either way, like they had to build this characteristic of being able to like sustain themselves. So, and one of the most unique things that I feel like when I first got into Hoya, everyone would say about Hoya is that they are succulent-like.
and you don't like that, do you?
I don't, because that really messed me up. I was like, oh, cool, I can just water you once a month.
But also succulents themselves don't thrive necessarily on neglect. I think that's just some like a misconception of people.
That also is a misconception. So I think like all in all, it just like perpetuates like misconception after misconception. So it's not my favorite, but there's a reason it's like that, because they have similar foliage characteristics that have been adapted to being drought tolerant.
I think why they people refer to Hoya a lot like succulents is the way they photosynthesize. And there's, this is something I didn't really look into prior, but like there's three different types of photosynthesis that happens in plants. You have CAM3, CAM4, and then, or no, C3, C4, and then CAM. Mm-hmm. And there's been studies on the carnosas, and honestly, we could have done the study when we had a cutting of the Hoya EPC318, because that cutting was literally sitting on a shelf with no water, no nothing for like 2, maybe 3 months, survived. And there's studies on Hoya where they kind of shut down. They'll shut down photosynthesize the intake of carbon. They'll close their stomata to...
What's a stomata? Nothing. What's a stomata?
So they have adapted like succulents, like the aloe, like cactus. They've adapted to have these like thick leaves that also help them retain water and have a very unique way to photosynthesize and do carbon exchange.
Yeah, because they say that most plants typically, when they open their pores, which is called the stomata is the pores of the plants, it usually happens when sunlight is present. So they're doing it during the daytime. And how that process works is when the stomata opens, it causes carbon dioxide to be intaked by the plant, which then is changed into sugar through photosynthesis. But in doing that, the plant loses water. And so yeah. Hoya and also succulents, cacti, and like some specific type of ferns don't metabolize in that process. And they do what Adam was talking about, CAM, which is the crassulacean acid metabolism. And that is a different way that those plants metabolize, and they actually do it at night opposed to in the daytime. So then how CAM happens, it happens at night, and the stomata, it'll stay closed during the day, and then it opens during the night because the air is usually cooler, and like naturally in the forest, there's also more moisture present. And what they do is they'll take in all the carbon dioxide at night, and then they store that until the next day as it's converted into malic acid. And that acid that they store is then converted back into carbon dioxide. So then they don't lose any moisture.
Yeah. So wow. When the sun comes out.
My brain.
They can take that to food. But the unique thing about what the study that I read about Carnosa, which I'm guessing it's most other Hoya, but they've just studied on Carnosa. It almost does this other hybrid form of, it's called CAM idling. And so basically, if they're going through a period of a lot of drought, they just shut down all of that. Mm-hmm. They just shut it all down, go into a dormancy period. And once they start getting water again, it takes about a week to like regenerate all of that activity, which, you know, that's why Hoya can kind of take a little bit of, I don't want to say abuse, but like, yeah, they can take a little, someone can take a little heat.
They can take hardship.
Like that EPC was like two months. Yeah. I mean, those leaves were floppy, and then they did bounce back.
They even like changed color. Yeah. They weren't like this deep green anymore. It was almost like starting to go, like, I want to say almost like gray in a way.
Yeah, it was.
Like really losing its color, which is interesting.
I wonder if there's a connection between them and like turtles. Because turtles do that too. Well, let's talk turtles. They go into Burmation in the winter.
Turtles.
And they like almost half die.
Let's talk turtles.
And their body doesn't like eat all of the like whatever they've been eating for nutrient. It like saves it up for the whole winter.
Girl, hummingbirds do that every night when they sleep.
So maybe Hoya, hummingbird, and turtles are all related.
They're all from the same like.
That's a hybrid tortoise turtle mix. Turtles.
Wow, mind blown.
It is very cool, and like plants that do the CAM method of photosynthesis have done that because they've they're in arid environments, and so they just had to adjust.
Damn, we need to like isolate that gene and give it to humans. Because we're going to be running out of water soon. We're going to be running out of edible like produce.
So we can process and convert our own carbon dioxide.
I mean, not to get too like conspiracy theory spirally, not conspiracy theory, because this isn't like, this is facts, but most of our crop is a C3 photosynthesis, and that highly depends on temperatures. And if temperatures are increasing, it kind of shuts down the ability to photosynthesize. So
Hoyas will save our life one day.
No, because we can't eat them.
Oh, no, we're going to study them and isolate the gene and do what they do.
Maybe.
And then we're going to turn into plants.
Yeah.
We're going to be legit. What if we had like little thumbs and then a little plant?
Oh, my gosh.
That'd be so cool.
So weird.
Poison ivy.
That's all I would say.
But this got me thinking about... Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, then speaking of, what plant would you want to become?
Not the carrie-eye.
I'd want to be whatever lived on your shelf for a long time. Because that's me, yeah. IRL.
It got me thinking when I was reading about this, is like, so I know you turn your grow lights on at nighttime.
I thought about that too.
Plants do need a rest period because like our Hoya in this CAM type photosynthesis, they need...
The nighttime.
The darkness, the rest, that's when they start breathing. That's when they open the stomata. That's when they do the exchange of carbon dioxide. And I was thinking like, well, if you turn your lights on at night, are plants getting the rest? But maybe it's like you just have to continually do it. Like you have to choose one and stick with it. But I don't know.
I wonder that too, because I wonder like, do plants exclusively know if it's daytime or nighttime? Because like in my grow tent, which it's pitch black in there during the daytime, but then at night is when my grow lights come on because, you know, temperature, but also, you know, because it's hot here. I don't want it to, like, become an oven in the middle of the day. Yeah. But also, I mean, electricity is expensive in Arizona during the summer. So then trying to, like, save on electricity too. But I do wonder if that affects anything. But they grow fine, so.
Yeah, but I'm guessing in that situation they've adjusted and that's their...
Our Hoya.
That's true.
That's their...
This meme here is our Hoya. Mine and Lydia's Hoyas.
But also maybe, like, it's okay because they're not going through drought.
Yeah.
You know, they are staying consistently watered and moist, so maybe that makes a difference too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're like a fish out of water, like in a little puddle. They're just like... barely alive. And we're doing that to them. We're torturing them.
I mean, when you really dive deep into like how the whole photosynthesis process works, it's kind of insane to think that like...
That a plant just does that.
Like I'm just looking at that Hushkaliana. The leaf is not very big, but there's like... There is
so much
chemical
happening.
Reactions going
there's
on inside
so
of there.
There's so much happening. It really is wild and crazy to think about.
You guys are freaking me out.
Why?
Okay.
Like my Hoyas are all living and breathing things. I don't want to think about that. I'm a very bad Hoya parent.
Bro, you're an avid Hoya murderer. You're gonna have to go to trial for that.
I feel like it.
We get those machines where you can hear your plants. We hook up to Jesse's and you just hear. No.
I'm you just kidding. Plug in, all you hear is screaming.
Me, this is my self-care. The plants torturing us is your torture. Torture.
That's a good real idea. Where you're just being like, oh, I love looking at my pants. And then we just cut to the plants and it's just people screaming.
There you go. Let's do it.
Okay, so apart from metabolism, the leaf structure itself of Hoya are really unique and adapted to be able to retain water. And that's where, like we said earlier, that succulent leaf shape comes from. But, you know, Hoya developed these thick leaves because those fleshy succulent type leaves, they allow these organs to develop that accumulate water within the foliage.
I know you don't do this, but I do. I usually let my leaves get pretty like, not flimsy, but you know, you could tell. When they're...
Your leaves taco. My leaves never taco.
Yeah. So I kind of let them get to that point before, you
like
know.
Like if I tried tacoing my leaves, they would snap.
And by tacoing, you mean folding in foliage. Like a little taco, like an American taco shell from Taco Bell.
I also don't know if I recommend doing that, but my leaves do get flimsy. They're not turgid and full.
Yeah. Mine never get flimsy.
Yeah.
Mine always get flimsy.
So, I think deduct from this conversation what you want and do what you want to do.
Hey, it's a free country. Do whatever you want to do.
Jesse's are always flimsy. Mine occasionally are. Lydia's never are.
Yeah. Who do you want to be when you grow up?
But also, there are Hoya that, you know, haven't developed that leaf structure of having the big, thick, succulent-type leaves. And, you know, like me, someone who loves thinner-leaved Hoya, they're not... I mean, those thinner-leaved Hoya, some of them, like, you cut them, and then the next day, they're flimsy like an aeroid would be, you know? So they don't have, like, that same structure, but... just naturally, a lot of those thinner Hoya, they're more known as like bushy, terrestrial growing climbing plants, which is more towards like earth-based. It's not up like a super high tree and getting exposed to like all sorts of elements. It's more earth-based, where it's more humid, less light, more moss, things of that nature. And so they're able to not have to have like the thicker leaves because they're able to get more of like the nutrients that they need. But they are saying for Hoya, when you see, like there are certain types of Hoya where the leaf shape or texture changes depending on where it is in the forest that they sit. And not all Hoya do this, but some Hoya, like when they're closer, like earth-based, the leaves are thinner, they get wider so they can capture more sunlight. And then as they go up and they gain more sunlight, like the leaves get thicker and smaller. Kind of like, it reminds me of like Lacunosa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's wild to think about. But I guess like it kind of can happen in our homes too, how the leaf shape texture can change based on where it's growing or, you know, the environment it's in.
Yeah. But then they were saying, you know, not all Hoya are like that. Like, I feel like a lot of, like, the bigger, thicker leaf Hoya, like Latifolia, no matter where it's growing, the leaves are always growing really thick, succulent leaves. And so they don't all do that, but there are a lot of Hoya that do that. And so leaf shape can vary from even the same plant that you have. So.
Wait, could you imagine if the multiflora got, like, rock hard leaves
as it got bigger and bigger?
Yeah.
Could you imagine if it was like small latifolia leaves and then they just begin?
Hola Hoya friends. So we launched our Patreon, aka Peduncle Pals. It's been a joy connecting more with all of you, chatting in our Facebook group, and sharing more behind the scenes through our exclusive Patreon episodes every month. We're blown away by your support, and we're so grateful for every one of you that is joining us on this club. You can subscribe through our Patreon link through our Instagram bio, episode descriptions, or show notes. See you there.
Looking to elevate your gardening game this season? Well, look no further than Coast of Maine, your go-to source for premium organic soils for over 28 years. Organic approved and sourced from oceans and farms, their full range of garden and lawn products are designed to restore roots to the natural world.
So picture this, you're struggling with lackluster soil just like I did last year, and your garden plants just aren't thriving. And that was until we discovered Coast of Maine. Their products infuse my soil with the healthy microbes and nutrients it was craving, resulting in vibrant outdoor plants that practically thanked me for the upgrade.
Omri listed and crafted from natural ingredients like lobster shells and fish bones, their products not only nourish your plants, but also your peace of mind.
Are you ready to take your garden to the next level? Coast of Maine believes in nurturing relationships with local retailers. That's why their products are carried by local retail partners who provide advice and insight, not just found in big box stores.
And Coast of Maine knows, from beginning to expert, anyone who takes a hand to the land has something to offer the growing community of gardeners everywhere.
Their products make organic gardening simple and approachable for everyone.
Let's get growing together.
Visit coastofmaine.com today. That's coastofmaine with an E.com.
But I think the interesting thing is when we were having that episode with Bess, he was talking about he really likes the Hoya that have the symbiotic relationships, and how literally there are Hoya that in order to survive, their leaf shapes are created in a way that they have this relationship with insects in the forest so that they can survive.
Yeah. I think the main one that I always think about when I think about the symbiotic relationship, especially with ants, is the imbricata. Mm-hmm. Because that's a shingling-esque type Hoya. And it's done that way because it kind of houses the ants and then takes the nutrients from their droppings. Mm-hmm. But I do kind of love when we figure out how like nature has developed for flora and fauna to like coincide and to help each other out. And then, I don't know, it's like you scratch my back, I scratch yours.
Yeah.
So I do love, like, I know Vess was really into like the ant symbiotic, the ant garden, mm-hmm. Hoya.
Yeah, and I gotta get my ant garden going.
No, you don't need to.
Oh my gosh, no.
What are some other ones?
They're saying that Undulata, actually, because what it is they form these very cup-shaped, like, bald leaves, right? And what it's supposed to do, it's supposed to basically be a home for ants, and it protects them from, like, rain and elements and things like that. So that's why they choose to live underneath those leaves. So, like, imbricata is one. They say undulata is one. Corymbosa, like, ignorata. And a lot of different types of, like, Deschidia, because there's ones like Deschidia major, which makes, like, those, like, almost, like, domes of leaves, and, like, the ants live inside of them.
The domatia leaves,
yes. I imported one of those ones, and there's a dead ant inside of it.
Wild. Well, we were at Unsolicited Plant Talks. There was one of the Deschidia that had the domatia leaf, and it was just, it was wild.
The Deschidia major?
Was it the major?
Yeah, it was the major, and it was, like, cute.
It's
almost bought it just because it was cute, and then I saw another one at Leaf and Spine, almost bought it, but Adam held me back.
Wow what a true friend. So then they protect the ants, and then, like you said, the ant droppings provide nutrients that the plant needs. And they were saying that a lot of those Hoya that have those symbiotic relationships, like, when you find them in nature, typically they're exclusively observed growing with ants. Like, that's always just what they do. Like, that's how they've been able to survive in these extreme habitats. So,
dang. I mean, I know Lacanosa doesn't usually have unique characteristics for that idea of a symbiotic relationship. But Vess did say that Lacanosa, he is thinking it was an ant type Hoya too.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But then there's also Hoya where, you know, it's just wild how these plants, because sometimes I think, like, whenever you put your Hoya first on a trellis and it just starts vining, and it finds its way somehow, like, if, like, that trellis ends and it looks for something else, and it almost feels like it has, like, eyes, and it's, like, moving around, and you're like, this is just a plant, like, how does it know?
But well, remember, I know we've said this before, but ¿cómo se llama la muchacha? April told us that she, like, recorded in one of her greenhouses one night, and she got freaked out from how,
it's like aliens, how much, like, movement there around. Was.
Yeah, because I believe we should try that someday with just a dark room and put the Hoya in the middle of it, because I think it starts, like, trying to swing. The vines tries to swing, like, harder until it can, like, latch onto something. It'd be wild to see.
It is crazy. But, like, it's crazy that, so, you know, Hoya, they're epiphytic, they're growing on, you know, trees, and most of them, like, in nature, they're not potted up like we have our plants. Like, they're not in this, like, moisture retentive, like, soil and getting all their nutrients. They're really just, like, out there suffering, you know? And so what a lot of these plants have done also that are on, like, bigger trees, they root themselves into, like, the lower layers of like the forest where there's, like, leaf droppings, because the decay from the leaves will fertilize the plant.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes when my leaves, like, dry up and drop off, I'm like, maybe I should just throw those out. But then part of me is like, maybe I'll just leave them on top and let them, like,
I do that with anything I have in soil or cocoa husk. I leave the dry leaves there.
Yeah.
I throw it away because I'm like, this isn't real nature.
I'm not trying to be that real.
I'm like, this is my house. You have a nice, cushy little pot that I water every single week. So we don't got to do this.
But if you look at plants, and a lot of the times I'm thinking of aroids, but Hoya too, when I see pictures of, like, in situ where people have shown where they find it in the wild, you know, you kind of have just a very long bare stem that's like winding around a tree. And then you have like the leaf and the foliage kind of towards the top because like it didn't have enough to sustain itself except for that little bit. And that's the same way when you see like monsteras in Florida or pothos in Florida, like they're climbing up a tree and you just see their giant stem, but it's bare all the way into like the top canopy.
Which is just wild. Yeah. If you like really think about it. And then it's like wild to think because, you know, you see all these photos of people who are like in the forest and things like that. And there's just all of this Hoya like all over these trees. And just to think like, okay, that Hoya is not growing like in a pot. It's growing on that tree and it's found a way to sustain its life growing on tree bark, you know?
Yeah.
Freaking wild. That's why Hoya are so amazing.
I want to live somewhere where we can have Hoya outside. I really do. Like, I think that's a life goal of mine.
That'd be really dreamy.
I mean, not that I'm trying to get away from you guys, but like...
But you are,
right? If I had the chance. But the places that in my mind where I was like, oh, my Hoya could live outside is not somewhere where I want to live.
Yeah.
So. Maybe you just need a little vacation, like rental in like Miami. And you can,
that's not where I want to live.
That's not where I want to vacation either. How about like Houston, Texas? Also not somewhere I want to vacation. No. New Orleans.
Yeah, we need more humidity.
San Diego? I secretly would live in Texas.
Yeah, I think I would too.
I don't think you would secretly. I think you would.
San Diego would be nice too. I think you belong in Texas. Like Southern California would be good.
Yeah. San Diego. I would definitely do San Diego.
Yeah. Like San Diego. Yeah. Los Angeles is kind of heat. Like this summer, Los Angeles already really heated up.
A little warm.
Yeah. And it has to be like beachfront proper. But then what if a hurricane comes next? Anyway. Oh.
Don't put your most precious moment, Hoya, there. Because
nature.
Although, does San Diego ever get tsunamis and stuff like that?
No, hurricanes?
It's not usually on the West Coast though, which is a weird thing to think about.
It's a good thing to think about.
Well, no, I'm saying like that they don't happen over on that side.
I never really thought about that.
Yeah. I mean, they do. Occasionally there'll be like a tropical storm.
It's not like how it's like in Florida where it's like in like New Orleans and stuff.
Okay. The Gulf really like generates and warms up and
then causes the,
I wonder why.
Interesting. So, yeah. So, those are some of the, like, environmental adaptations that our Hoya have made. But also, I saw your notes about how, because, you know, now a lot of people are talking about pests.
Yes.
And people see certain Hoya leaf or Hoya stem characteristics, and they're like, oh, my gosh, I have a pest. What do I do? And I mean, guilty. I've done that too before. Like I've seen like little like knobs and like scratch them off. And then once you use the sap, you're like, oh, that was actually part of the plant, you know? But like, what are some of the ones that you've noticed?
Well, I mean, so me personally, I think the main one that I think kind of sometimes tricks everybody is the knobs on the stems, which is... aerial roots, like, or a spot where aerial roots would start. And that's kind of like where they would attach to a tree if there was enough humidity kind of thing. If you have a high humidity, you'll see roots coming out of all parts of the Hoya.
Because they're epiphytic.
Yeah. Any Hoya that I get from Adam usually has a bunch of little air roots, like, sticking out. It looks like...
Medusa?
Yeah.
Shakira?
Or no. The lady in Monsters, Inc.,
oh my gosh. Okay, I know who you're talking about.
The snake
about.
Lady?
Yeah. Oh, well, that is Medusa, my bad.
And well.
Because Hoya, because aroids, you know, you have to grow those roots from a node. Mm-hmm. But Hoya aren't like that. They can grow from anywhere. Those roots can grow anywhere from the stem. And so
even just
they
a
develop,
leaf with a single bit of stem on it.
Yeah.
But they develop these like little like knobs, would you say?
Yeah, it's and they're usually like white in color. So I would say, okay, I know this is kind of gross, but it looks like a pimple, like a whitehead.
It does. It really does. Yeah,
and
you're right.
People, me included, freak out and kind of think it could be scale because scale is one of those pests that like unless you've had it, like you could be fooled by it. Like you could see that and be like, ooh, that probably could be scale.
Because it's like a brown little nub. Mm-hmm. Like same thing, you know?
Yeah, it's like a little like... bulbous roundish kind of
it looks like Patrick's home, Patrick the star.
Isn't it just a rock?
But that's what it looks like, a little dome, and it like lifts up. Because I've had scale, so I'm an expert.
So, but then there's so many different types of scale too. Like there's bigger thing, but so that is one of the things that a lot of people see, that especially if they get their Hoya from somebody who grows in high humidity, where those knobs or nodules or whatever you want to call them, I mean, aerial roots, starters, they're going to be more present in, if you're growing in a Hoya in that environment. So people usually get their plants and they see them and they're like, and they're posting on the Facebook groups to be like, is this a pest? And then usually it's like 50-50. Like people are like, definitely scale, definitely scale. And then everyone's like, nothing to worry about.
It's just natural part of the plant. But also I've seen people who have received plants where the aerial roots have grown out. And like when they grow out like that and they're not in a pot or anything like that, I mean, because they're white and it's almost like, I want to say like fluffy in a way where it almost kind of looks like mealies. And I've seen people be like, oh my gosh, my plant has root mealies all over this like piece of the plant, when it's just the roots like have grown out, you know,
in the regular also you can cut those roots off if you don't want them, if you don't like the vibe.
Serves no purpose. Like if it's already rooted, serves no purpose, just you can just cut them off.
Some other ones, the little hairs that people say, I call them hairs, but they're not hairs. But you know, when our new Hoya leaves grow, they get like the crystallized, sometimes they can look like dog fur on the end of your Hoya. And then they also
white
kind
cotton
of
cotton fluff.
Yeah. A lot of people see that and freak out and think that it's like spider webs or spider mites or something.
Yes. Cause when those leaves are like first growing, it can't just be like high and dry and then they're going to be fine. Like the plant has created a way where they can, like in a, like a lubricant in a way, so that the leaves can like grow and stretch and not break and tear. But once they like dry off, it really does look like if you were, it always reminds me of, if you're like melt candy down, you know how people melt candy down then they like pull the stick out and then you like see it like stretch and then it's like, whew, you know.
Do that again.
It's
the hoof of the leaf.
That's what it looks like.
But like cotton candy, y'all. That's what we're talking about.
A technical term, I believe colliders is what I kind of came up with, is what that is. But it is like, it does kind of secrete and like help the new leaf. But they do kind of stick around, almost like cotton candy too. But it is nothing to worry about. People do freak out about that a lot. One I see quite a bit in like that Hoya 101 Facebook group. People are like, what is this? Like, which I get, you know.
I've definitely sprayed that with alcohol.
Have you?
When I see it, I'm like, and I'm like, oh wait, no, this is normal. It's okay.
Even going with that, like extra floral nectaries, which is a very similar thing, not so much in Hoya,
mostly like aroids, like people freak out about
it. But when you Google like sticky sap on leaves, everything is like mealybugs, because mealybugs secrete that when they like are chewing your leaves, and that's their like waste is sticky. So people usually do just assume the worst with those ones.
And then I don't know a technical term for this, but ever since like the whole microscope thing has become bigger and people are microscoping their plants, I see a lot, like a lot of Hoya, when you look at the foliage, there are like two brown dots on either end at the base of the foliage. You know like what I'm talking about? Node. Yeah, they're like two little dots.
Almost like little horns.
Yes, almost like little horns. And
not the ones on the leaf, because there are horns on the leaf too sometimes.
Oh, but you're talking about like on the stem. Yes, there are some on the stem too. People are like, oh my gosh, what is this? It must be a bug. Like, it's not moving. But it's not moving because it's part of the plant.
I don't know what the technical term is. I meant to look that up today, but I don't know if like it's really easy to look up either.
Yeah, I didn't like yield any like scientific terms, but
I'm gonna scientifically name it freckles
or Hoya horns or
Hoya dimples. But instead of in, it's out.
Yeah.
So Audi dimples.
That's an Audi. Another one I didn't write down, but when I was going through my flat mite debacle, you know, the flat mites kind of, when you shine a light on them, they give you an orange type glow. But on my carnosas, a lot of the times there's like, I'm just going to say it's extra floral nectaries, because I'm sure that they draw in ants with those. But when they dry and they crystallize, they turn like bright orange. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to see on the carnosa stems, like all the carnosa varieties that I have. But I did freak out because I was like, what is this? Like, you know, but it's not moving, but it's all over. So I'm like, something's wrong, but nothing's wrong.
So there's like all these little things, you know, but at the end of the day, it's like, and sometimes I forget too, because, you know, like they're like in our home, and to us in a way they're like ornamental plants. But then at the end of the day, it's like, it's nature in our home, you know?
Yeah.
And that's me saying that.
But it's not nature in Lydia's home. This is a nature.
I mean, it's just wild to think that, you know, these plants that are just plants have like created all these ways to like survive and adapt. And then now we have them in our homes, you know, like it's just wild to me to think.
And another, like when you start thinking about that, like we're currently, like there's currently plants right now that are in the process of adapting to a new type of environment, but we're not witnessing, but we are witnessing. We're at the same period of time, like where plants are like evolving to adapt to a certain type of thing.
Yeah. Cause if you like think about it, the way that we grow Hoya is not natural. You know what I mean? Like we've made them adapt to our living and growing condition because we need them to grow a certain way. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, we do things to help them grow more naturally than where they come from, but it's never gonna be, not for us at least. I mean, there are some people that are like, oh, I'm gonna put this Hoya on the tree and it's gonna grow up and fit it, you know, but like we can't do that. So it is wild to think like they've adapted, they've changed, and some of them, who knows, like maybe a little piece of it was, you know, like hanging on a tree and growing epiphytically and all beautiful, and now it's growing in a pot here at our home, you know, like
yoink. Poor plants.
But I wonder, you know, if they miss their family. Oh, no, this whole episode makes me feel like one of those episodes of Everything is Alive.
Everything is Alive.
That's a podcast. It's good. I recommend it.
It is. Okay, but it is crazy, though, because sometimes, I don't know, you almost forget that it's like living and breathing. And like, if you just like sit in the room, they're like, your plants are breathing with you. It's a little weird.
Yeah. I mean, when you do a time lapse and kind of like see,
it feels alive because they're like moving.
And you can visually see the wiggle and the shake and the pumping up and like breathing in and breathing out kind of thing.
Yeah.
Wild.
It is crazy. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So that was some just leaf and anatomy information about our beloved Hoya. Yes. And hopefully you guys enjoyed it.
And none of it, again, is exhaustive. None of it is coming from the highest degree of education. It is all a hobby that we love sharing with you guys. Yes. And we love learning, too, if you have more information.
Give us lessons. But anyway, we do love sharing, and we hope you also love sharing, as in sharing our podcast with other Hoya lovers, because that will get us into other people's ears. And you know what? The love of Hoya is a blessing to everyone. So even if someone doesn't love Hoya, like gift them a plant and then gift them the link to our podcast.
Be epiphytic about this podcast.
And while you're at it, you can purchase a Hoya sticker and gift them a Hoya with the Hoya sticker that has a link and link our podcast. You know, it's just a full circle.
Imagine people life. Like on the subway, just like look up and they see the Let's Talk Hoya sticker on their like water bottle. And then they like make eye contact and fall in love. And like the little Hoya baby is born.
Oh my gosh. They both listen to Let's Talk Hoya. They make eye contact and then they go, dun, 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 dun. Our theme song.
That was our theme song. That was not our theme song. Maybe instead they'll be like, they'll be like, Las Noticias.
Las Noticias.
And they're going to, what's another name? They're going to be like, Annyeong.
But yes, we do love having you guys, and we love when you share, and we love your enthusiasm about the podcast and about Hoya. So keep it up and head over to our Instagram at let's.talkhoya, where we have information from this episode, past episodes, fun stuff, reels, like all kinds of stuff over there on Instagram. And yeah, follow us there. And you can also follow us individually. My personal Instagram is at notdude.
I'm at thegreenplant.az.
And I'm at perritos y plants. Adios.
Año.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.